Hey buddy, if it's 1 o'clock on Tuesday, it must be Tuesdays with Dave. I want to welcome everybody to the call today. It is a rainy day here in New England. Although the New England Patriots did beat the New Orleans Saints over the weekend, that was good after stumbling the first week. So, hope everybody's doing well. If you're new to the Mastery Call, welcome aboard. Simply follow the instructions from your coach as you move along, and you're in the right place because we'll get you to your goals. It's a proven system. We've been doing it now. We're teaching it for 14 years. And if you've ever been to the office, if you haven't been to the office, please come. See all the success stories from people that have sent us their pictures and pictures of their properties and all the deals that they're doing. We have our walls lined with them, which is makes us the most proud here. Had a pretty busy weekend. We went over to up to Killington, New Hampshire, Killington, Vermont. We did the Spartan Race, the Beast, which was 14 miles, 32 obstacles. I had a team of seven, my brother Dan, Rob Campbell, three of my nephews, and another friend. And it took us 10 hours. If you ever have skied Killington, you know it's a pretty big mountain. And we went up and down that mountain three times doing these obstacles, and it was pretty brutal. I think some of the nephews thought that they could get through it without training as much as they should have, and by midway through, they realized that they're going to be lucky to get through it. So we probably should have finished in about eight and a half hours, but we had there's just one area called the Death March, which is pretty much straight up, two double black diamonds right up the center of the mountain. And we almost lost somebody on that. I'll tell you, we started at 9:30. We get done at 7:30, 7:26 to be exact. And it was a lot of fun. You could probably go on the Beast website. You see us all jumping over the fire, which is the last obstacle, at the same time at 7:26 at night. But it was good. And next race is at Fenway Park in November. If anybody's around in the area, come join us. We'll be racing through. It's a short one. It's a 5K. Spartan has what they call the trifecta. You do the 3K, you do the 8-miler, and then you do the 14-miler all in 1 year, and they give you a special medal, which we will have completed at Fenway Park. Plus, it's a good way to see the park as well. Get to climb on the Green Monster and be out in the outfield. It's going to be a lot of fun. So let me see. I got a high five going on here. Oh, we've got a couple of events coming up, by the way. This week we have Multifamily Millions Bootcamp here in Boston, and I am teaching it for the first time in 2 years, coming out of retirement. This is in my own backyard. It's actually in Plymouth, Massachusetts, right next to the Mayflower, right next to Charlie's Cupcakes, which is my favorite. So I'll be teaching that for the next 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then I probably won't teach it again until I don't know when. But I'll be doing that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then we've got the Perfect Your Presentation coming up October 4th and 5th that's in Plymouth. The Boston Boot Camp is actually in Boston by the Commons where I used to live. So, and then on October 6th and 7th, we have Elevate, which is a brand new group that I created. It's all about having your best year ever, whether you're just starting out, whether you had a kick-ass year last year, it doesn't matter. This program is going to get you. It's all about the head stuff that gets you to the next level. You know, how did a kid that was just coming off of a rock and roll band with about 12% of his brain cells left go from so afraid to buy his first three-family property to owning 8,000 units? Well, it's all about mental improvement, constantly improving yourself along the way and finding systems that work. And we teach how to buy these things physically, the process of actually buying a multifamily process and doing it right. And if you follow it, it will get done right. But there's a whole mental game to this as well. And for the first time, I created a group to understand that. So if that's something you're interested in, feel free to call Jermaine at the office here, Jermaine or Jeannie. They'll be happy to give you the information on Elevate. If you like, the most common question I think we get on that is, oh, I just joined Mastery and I'm just starting out. Is Elevate something that, you know, would be right for me? Well, we got a lot of Mastery students that are in that particular event, but you can call Jermaine and he can ask you a few questions and you can determine whether it's right for you or not. But it's going to be great. It is groundbreaking. I'm so excited about that. I'm going to be sharing all of that information for the first time during that event. All right, so I want to give a, I want to welcome the new students from Kansas City. It's good to see you guys on the Skype. When we were there, Tammy and Jeff, Tammy and the rest of them all went out for the barbecue, and they said they had great barbecue on a Sunday night, which that's why I like, last time I was in Kansas City about 8 years ago. Barbecue's great. We got some a high five for Jennifer Hale, Sherry Roseman, and Matt Donahue because they purchased a 64-unit in June in Huntsville for $1,070,000. It was built in the 1960s. The units are extremely large. The property was in walking distance from both the high school and the elementary school. Value play, rents are low, so they'll be raising rents once the leases are due. They're putting $450,000 of improvements, including new roofs. And they're updating all of the units to get market rents. They're currently partnering with the local police in the apartment next door to improve the neighborhood. It's always a plus. They already had a tenant appreciation day. You know, one of the, this reminds me of this property we bought in Texas many years ago called Casa Serena. And there was one way in and one way out, and it was a very difficult property, you know, and there had been drug dealers in there, and we were taking a property that needed to be totally repositioned. And we had, we call it Share the Love Day. And we would stand up, we would have the staff stand out, and as the tenants were leaving to go to work, we would have water and donuts there for them that they could take with them. And people were like, what are you doing? I don't have the money to pay for that. We're like, oh, no, it's free. New management, new owner, you know, we're sharing the love. And we could always know, we would always know who the drug dealers were or the people that were leaving and all of a sudden realized that they were being stopped on the way out and they figured that the car was being searched or something was being searched, that something was going on. Those people turned around and went back. So we started taking down license plates when we realized that that was happening after our third or fourth complex of doing this. So I go on here. It says that the tenants are thrilled because someone is taking care of the property, and according to Jennifer, is running it the right way. Running it the right way is a value play in itself. So high five to Jennifer, Sherry, and Matt. Three. Jennifer Hale, by the way, we partnered with her on a property in Huntsville as well. Yeah, I was just there, I think, a week and a half ago, taking a look at it. If you're listening, Jennifer, I want you to know that they are behind on installing or taking down the stairwells and putting up the new stairwells. So a little behind on that, but otherwise it's going good. All right, so if you would like to ask a question, you just simply press star zero. That will get you in the queue. So star zero will get you in the queue. And operator will take your name, and I'm going to ask a couple of questions. I'm going to answer a couple of questions that came in via email along the way. So Thomas Nelson from Seattle writes in, it's been 11 years since a crash. Do you think we're due for another? We're definitely due for a correction. A crash, I don't know, but definitely a correction. That's going to be coming in the next 2 to 4 years. That's why it's so good to be investing now, getting your systems in place, and when that correction comes, you will scoop up. And the reason it's so good to be, you know, getting experience now is because when the correction does happen, there's going to be a lot of properties in the market, and a lot of them are going to look really good. They're going to look really cheap. But it's the experienced investor that's going to buy the property that's going to appreciate the most and that's going to perform the best. It's the inexperienced investor, the person that's just getting into the game when the correction happens, that's going to make their mistakes. Buying properties that just weren't that great to begin with. So you can either really kill it during a correction, or you can, that correction could be a good learning curve for you. You'd rather kill it. So that's why you're smart to be doing some deals now before the correction happens. Some deals, a few deals, a lot of deals. Jennifer Hale's out there kicking butt. And deals she partnered with me, I think, was a third deal. Now she's into another one, so she's got four properties under her belt, and she's just doing well. And she's not, you know, there's a lot of students that are doing that out there. So it's good. One more, and then I'll go open line. This one's from Alec Warren from Anaheim, California. He says, I'm really interested in Elevate, but I was wondering, is it something a new investor like me should get involved with now or wait until I have done some deals under my belt? Elevate is all about getting the mental attitude to do deals, either to get into deals now or to do larger deals now, deals that you're already doing. So it's good for whatever level you're at, whether you're just starting out, whether you are have gotten some deals and you've hit a plateau, or if you just want to have a much better year than you had last year, and for some people that's going to be really easy because last year sucked, right? And for other people, you had a great year. But what if you had another year that was even greater? That's what Elevate's all about. And that's why it's good for everybody. It's not like a mastermind where you go and you're afraid that you're going to be the smartest person in the room or the dumbest person in the room. It's not like that at all. Elevate is all about taking you where you are right now and mentally changing you, giving you things to think about, doing different exercises, going to allow you to have breakthroughs and get you to an area that you haven't performed. That's what it's all about. Oh, just realized that my phone wasn't off the hook and my headset wasn't on, so this must be much better now. All right, let's go to online. Who's there? Who's got a question? Operator.
Okay, first question comes from Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave, it's Mark Dupuis from Ottawa, Ontario. How you doing?
Mark, what's going on up there?
Not much. Still trying to rope down this 40 unit that we got under contract. We're in due diligence right now, so we're trying to handle that thing. That's where my question comes from, actually. Owner is a they're self-managed, so it's a father-in-law and son-in-law team. They seem to be doing everything from changing the carpets to everything themselves. So I think they're a little overwhelmed and in a little bit over their heads with these properties they got. So they've got a couple of properties in Louisville, and I'm trying to track down all the documentation to prove all the things that they're saying. You know, it wasn't too hard to track down all the expenses, but the income, he says he goes around and collects all the rent and then he just shoves it all in one bank account. So he says he doesn't really have any way to prove the income. You know, like he can't show me here's the $10,000 I collected from this property this month and put it in the bank. So what do you do in that situation? Like I'm kind of leaning a little bit because I think he's kind of trying to say, look, I really don't have anything to give you. So I'm kind of leaning on my property manager to say, hey, listen, if worse comes to worse and this guy is really scamming me and, you know, none of these tenants really are real and they just all kind of up and leave the next day, you know, can you kind of fill these things quickly for me?
You've got to tell him that he's going to open up an account and he's going to start doing deposits.
Operating
them? Starting deposit slips. Yeah, for the next couple of months. That's the only way to really verify it.
Okay.
And then when you're doing your walkthroughs, you want to do tenant interviews.
Yep.
You know, he must have a rent roll. Does he have a rent roll?
Yeah, he does now. He didn't really have one when we kind of got in there. He's like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I should have that. So we've kind of forced him to put some things. Sorry?
How is he tracking who pays him? How does he know who owes him?
Well, he has sent us a spreadsheet that's basically not on all units, but it's basically a spreadsheet with the payment history from each unit. But, you know, that's just a spreadsheet. Like I could put up a spreadsheet saying, you know, this guy's paying me this month, not paying me next month. You know, there's no real, you know, like I'd rather see a bank deposit because that's kind of, you know, clearly shows money going in the bank. So
yeah,
that's all he's kind of really given us.
The only thing you can do at this point is to, is to have him open a separate account, have him make deposits in those accounts now. Then when you go, you know, through your property, you should be interviewing the tenants and asking them. I don't know, it's really hard to, it's such a difficult situation when something like this happens, and it usually happens with smaller operators. So in the bank, I mean, have you talked to Eric Stewart? Who's doing financing?
Yeah, I've talked to Eric. I'm waiting to have
what
him get back. I haven't talked to him about that.
Because he'll know what all the banks are going to be looking for. To be honest with you, usually these deals don't work out because when they finally put all the money, the things together. All right, they realize that, holy crap, this property was actually losing money. All right, and when you're buying on actuals and the property is losing money, you know, it doesn't support the price that they're looking to pay. So that's
right.
That has been my experience when I was buying properties that size.
Okay.
So,
well, I think we're like he's pretty low on the rents, and I got a really good property manager in that area, so he's pretty confident that he can get them all rented up if that's kind of what needs to be done. So I'm not too worried about like I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, you still have to get your financing though.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
Yeah, I would talk to Eric Stewart now and ask him, you know, what you should do in order, and then let me know too, because it's been a while since I've been in this situation or someone's asked me this question,
yep.
So I'm not sure what they're doing these days. But ask him, you know, what you need to do to verify that income, what the bank would be looking
yep.
to do to verify.
Good. I'm actually waiting for a call from Eric. I sent him an email a couple of days ago, and I'm waiting for him to get back to me. But I'll probably reach out to him today.
How are you doing with the expenses? Is he giving you invoices?
Yep. That's not a problem because it's a gas bill, it's a hydro bill, it's a water bill. Those aren't, you know, he was just trying to weasel out of giving me anything really, because we're like 20 days into due diligence and, you know, the contract says, look, you got to give me everything within 7 days, and we're still, you know, waiting for stuff. So I pushed him.
Does your contract say that the due diligence period doesn't start until buyers produce all financials?
No.
Oh.
No, it doesn't.
That would have been a good one to
have
in there.
I know. Yeah, I usually put that one in there, but I don't know, for one reason I didn't. I used one of the templates that I got from you guys and it wasn't there, so I kind of left it out. But from the get-go, I kind of saw this trickling in documents thing happening, and I kind of saw that was what was going to happen, and I let the broker know right away. I said, hey, listen, I think we're going to have a problem down the road with this from a timing perspective. So I said, let's set the expectation right now that I might need some more time because, you know, if I don't have the documentation, there's not much I can do. So and
yeah,
I
would reset that contract so it states that it doesn't start until you've got all the information. Your due diligence doesn't start because what can you do? You know, there's really nothing you can do.
Yeah, and we've gone. I mean, we're spending money, right? We did the inspection and all that kind of stuff. So you know, guys are going out there. Like the guy that did the inspection showed up with seven guys, and they went through and they zapped through all the units in like, you know, a couple hours. We were done. So, you know, we're doing stuff and we're spending time. And I'm going. You know, I've been down there a couple times already. So yeah, I want to make sure that this is gonna fly. I'm still trying to raise the funding for it too. So that's another piece that's kind of up in the air still. Eric said he had a couple of guys that would potentially do the sponsoring of it.
Yeah.
But we haven't had that chat yet. So I'm still trying to raise the funds. Still trying to put the sponsor together, and. Yeah, get the rest of the documentation and put this thing to bed.
Well, if you want to give you contact information, anybody that's interested in going into a 40 unit and going through the process with you, who should they reach out to? Give an email address.
Okay. My email address is mark, M-A-R-C, dot Dupuy, D-U-P as in Peter, U-I-S as in Sam, at simple. Acquisitions. That's SimpleAcquisitions.com. I think it's time to get a shorter domain name.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck on that. I know you got it's a hill to climb with something with a seller like this, but. Not to say that it can't be done. You just got to be very, very cautious.
Yeah, well, I'm on a call with him as soon as we get off this call here at 2. So part of what we're talking about is, hey, when's the stuff coming? And this is the, you know, we gave him a checklist to begin with. These are the documents we need. He keeps coming back to us and says, what else is needed? I'm like, well, you got the checklist you gave to me. You should be able to figure out what's the delta. But he keeps coming back saying, okay, what else? So, yeah, it's a little difficult, but I think it's because he's a small operator and he's kind of doing it all himself, and you know, he could have just been easily, you know, laying some tile today and then picking up the phone and talking to me, going, okay, what are we doing here? What do I need to give you? You know, he's not in his office. He's, you know, he's kind of at the property doing some physical labor. So I think that's part of the issue. But we'll work our way through it.
Yep, absolutely.
Those are good ideas, Dave. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Whatever tells you about that.
All right, I will. Thanks.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye.
Oh. Okay. Who's next?
Okay, up next we have Joe. Joe, please go ahead.
Hello, Dave. Dave, it's Joe Sweeney from Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Hey, what's going on down there?
Good. Still plugging away. First, I'd like to give kudos to Jeannie and Laurie for a wonderful management training weekend. They did a wonderful job.
Yeah, I heard it went really well over there.
Yeah, really good. Good information and was delivered really well. Appreciate all their efforts.
Excellent. Good. Thank you for that. And kudos to them.
And my question is, Dave, in doing your underwriting, if you're looking at doing improvements, let's say you need half million dollars of improvements and you want to raise that money in your initial raise, is it better to try to get it all up front or to do half of it and maybe do the other half 6 months or a year down the road? Because I know the extra closing costs throws your numbers off a little bit.
How are you going to raise the money for the improvements?
In the initial offering, the initial raising. Is it better to do it all that way or wait a year or so down the road and do however you can do it?
No. Well, if you do it a year or so down the road, then you're going to have to. That will screw up your offering because you'll have new investors coming in behind it. And if you have investors that make a commitment to give some now and then the rest later, that's a nightmare. So the best thing to do is to get it all now, put it into an escrow account, and then release it as you need it.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
That was my main question.
All right. What kind of deal did you get?
Well, we're working on a deal. Not nailed down yet, but it's going to need a lot of improvements right up front. So we were wondering whether we should do it all at once or try to do it like I said. But you pretty much clarified that.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Thanks, Dave, for the info.
Good. Okay. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, who's next in the wise cracker line today?
Okay, up next we have Chris. Chris, please go ahead.
Hello?
Chris.
Dave, how are you, sir?
What's up?
Nothing. Just kind of enjoying the day. It's beautiful out here. It's one of the days that you want to be in Minnesota, dude.
Yeah? Because it's actually sunny and warm?
Yeah, this is the time, man. All except, you know, December, January, February, maybe March too. By the way, I appreciate your Jay Giles reference there too.
Right on, man. It's all on my little Rosanna Dennis there.
Hey, real quick, I've been coming across like some properties, obviously, that need. Some capital improvements, and I find that the current owners are doing them, and so the expenses are like just jacked with, you know, capital expenditures. When I'm analyzing, and they have those noted, hey, this is for a roof on building 17 or whatever it is. Do I remove those from the annual expenses and kind of look at that as a capital expenditure, or how do I look at that during the analysis?
They're putting them in their operating expenses?
Yeah, I've come across that several times, and that's, you know, at first I just thought it was a goofy, you know, owner, but it could be several goofy owners, I guess.
Yeah, that's a really inexperienced seller because you want to get as much below the line as you can to make your NOI look better, to get a higher price.
Right, right, yeah.
So I think the thing to do is if you like the property, then you look at what it is that they say that they did.
Yeah.
If they actually did it, you know, like the new roofs, new equipment, HVACs and all that, then put it below the line when you're doing your analysis. But that's to say that when you go to make your offer and you justify it by the numbers, you show them their numbers. But when you look at where the value add is, you look at that's where your play area is.
Okay.
So
all right.
you make your first offer based on the actuals, and then you know what your room is with
right.
the
okay.
Google design.
So consider them what they've given me. Just consider it as part of the underwriting, and then kind of weed through the what should happen.
Yeah.
Okay. And then this is kind of a maybe even a sillier question, but I look at it. I see this all the time too, and it's just a expense question about trash, right? I look at trash as a contract service. There's always more than one potential contractor in the cities.
Yeah.
And a lot of everybody puts this under utilities. So I was
that's a common mistake.
Okay.
For it. If it was utility, contracted services, I mean, you get bids and you contract it out. Trash isn't utilities.
Okay, that's how I think about it too, but I've just seen it so many so often as a utility.
By the way, everybody, there's this new thing out there called concierge trash, where for an extra $10 a month, you send your maintenance guys over to pick up people's trash and throw it in the dumpster. And I mean, you've got a building that could add quite a bit to your bottom line if you get a bunch of tenants doing that. I discovered that about a year and a half ago when I was walking a property that I was interested in buying. I was walking as if I was going to be a tenant, and they had that option in there on the lease, and I was like, that's interesting. So that's a good one to add in there.
Yeah, I've seen that too. And just by the way, we're in the hunt here for a property out. I think we bid $7 million on a 7.8 deal, and we're going down to look at it. The broker wants us to come see it because we are in the hunt. And he wants to push for us. I think we're onto a good one here. So I just thought I'd give you an update there.
Don't keep it down.
And no, I won't. And then there's I've got like four other offers I'm trying to get done this week too. All of a sudden I got hit with a bunch of properties. It's a good problem to have, but the talk about the relationship piece.
Yeah.
Go ahead. It's really starting to flow.
Your relationships are starting to gel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you keep doing the things that you're supposed to do, eventually it breaks open. You know, it just can't help but breaking open if you're doing the things that you need to do. And I know you've been working hard at it. And that's for everybody else out there as well. If you're struggling, you know, look at the basics. Are you doing the basics every day? A little bit every day? It doesn't have to be a lot every day, but are you doing the basics a little bit every day, creating your relationships, analyzing deals, putting in at least a couple offers during the week? They don't have to be deals at work. Just want to talk to a broker about an offer and how you came up with it. So you're doing those things, and, you know, eventually all of a sudden the floodgates open. But sometimes it happens sooner. Sometimes it happens later. But it happens. It just has to. You know, it's just it's got a law of attraction out there.
One quick note, if I can, just to help others too, is once I had a couple of offers, then I've analyzed quite a lot of deals in the last 5-6 months, and you know, I started to not put offers in because I said, I don't like this building, or I don't like this area, or whatever it was. You know, I just started not putting offers in, and I'm like, a couple of weeks ago, I kicked myself and I said, you know what? It's good experience. It's good to have the conversation with these guys, and now things feel like they're really clicking, and I'm pretty psyched. And a couple of guys that I've partnered with here are pretty pumped too. So things seem to be really on the uptick here for me.
Yeah. So I got your text. I think it was yesterday. Well, no, maybe the day before, and then I forgot to text you back. But I'll catch up with you near the end of the week for that. And then the answer to the question that you asked Debbie is yes, but I want to talk to you about that as well.
That's why I text you, because I want to talk with you. I didn't want to just throw something. Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Fair enough. I won't waste anybody else's time. But thanks, man. I'm pretty psyched to come see you again.
Keep up the good work.
Doing whatever I can. I really am. It felt like there was a couple of days there, like you said, you know, your mind gets kind of beat down and, you know, what am I doing? And all of a sudden you wake up the next day and you start kicking in it again. And look, I feel like, geez, the doors are like cracked open. My foot halfway through and I'm about to pull myself through. It's pretty cool.
Yep. Good stuff.
Yep.
Good. It's a good journey.
It is.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right, sir.
All right, who's next up there? That's not
okay,
from
next
cold
we have...
Minnesota. Go ahead.
Okay, Brandon is next.
I'm sorry, who's that?
Hi,
Brandon.
Brandon, Brandon in Denver. How are you?
Brandon, what's going on?
Nada. So I got some question about 1031 exchanges and your preference on where to place them. So initially I was going to place it myself to do my own deal, self-funded, but curious what you think of either putting it in my own property just myself or invest in the deals that we're doing.
So you've got money that you're turning over from another property, and you're wondering, should you move that into solely your own property or into a partnership?
Correct.
If you go into the partnership, there's a good chance you won't be able to exchange it again because, you know, you have to stay in the same entity as you're leaving. So they would need to, I believe, you have to check with an exchanger, but I believe that they would need to name the buying entity the same name as your exchange for it to be valid.
I see. Yeah, I've talked to a few, and they mentioned doing a tenant in common. So if there's a security transaction on the deal, that it voids that?
That may be, but I'll tell you what, nobody wants to do tenant in common transactions these days. Not Fannie Mae, not Freddie Mac. They may say that they'll look at it, but trust me, they won't. CMBS loans aren't doing them. Maybe a local bank might do it, but... And the reason is because there's so much risk in a tenant in common relationship because everybody has to agree 100%, and it turns out to be a nightmare. I had three of them. One of them ended up in foreclosure because we had two partners, and they had a big breakup during our ownership of the property. We owned this property for about 6 years, I believe. It was a 7-year balloon. The balloon was coming due. We were getting close. We were getting like, I don't know, a couple of weeks before the closing date, 93% occupied, and all of a sudden one partner says he's not signing anything. It's like, well, what do you mean you're not signing anything?
Wow.
It's like, I'm not signing anything because of blah, blah, blah. And the banks, like the bank saw the potential in the property and where it was at, and they're like, we're going to just take this back. You know, you're gonna hit your expiration date and you're done. And so we filed lawsuits and, you know, but the lawsuits took too long, and we lost the property, 93% occupied because of a tick, because one partner wouldn't sign off on a refinance, and he was in for $100,000. He was willing to lose the $100,000 to piss his partner off. That's how mad I was at him.
So would you change your opinion if the ticks were with family members of mine? No, we had the same goal.
You know, I don't know. I don't know your family, but I can tell you what. You know, when family's involved in any type of a business, it changes the dynamics of the family. There's still – you got to take a look at all the different personalities involved. I like the fact that one person – like I call it the LLC umbrella, where everybody comes under one LLC and there's one ruler. It's like a dictatorship. And you're the dictator, and you know it's not like, all right, this is how we're going to do it, and what I say goes. It's of course, you know, you talk to the other members, you ask them their advice, you tell them what's going on with the property, you get their input, you make decisions together. But if all of a sudden there's a problem, you know, and something comes up, and you need to make a decision, the right decision, then you have the authority to do it instead of, you know, being in a tenant in common where it has to be 100%. And somebody can get mad at somebody else and just make the wrong decision out of spite. That's the possibility of the future. And that's why a lot of the different lending institutions won't do them anymore.
Interesting. Okay. One other quick question about repositioning. We're about to submit an offer on a 85 vintage, 160 unit, and we want to take it and try to compete with some newer builds, you know, plus 2010. Have you experienced that and share any, you know, success with that?
I'm sorry, what was it? I didn't understand.
So we're going to reposition an 85 vintage complex and try to compete with something that's been built in 2010. Do you think that's reasonable?
It's certainly possible. You just got to take a look at the amenities, you know, who's got
amenities are pretty
amenities.
yeah, amenities are the same, location's the same. It's actually within a half mile. It's a great area.
What about,
we just sorry.
What about the insides of the unit? Are they nice and fresh?
On 2010 build, yeah, for sure. But the existing ones, I love the floor plans. I think we could do some fantastic stuff to them. They have high ceilings, balconies, larger units, better square footage than the newer build.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know the two different properties you're talking about, but it sounds like that you could compete. I would do my numbers based on being like 10% below them to see if the numbers still work, you know, or even 20% below them to see if the numbers still work good. And if they do, then if you can't compete against them, then you get a home run.
Great. All right. Thanks so much for your advice.
All right. Good luck out there.
Thanks.
All right. I'm gonna answer another question here. This one is from, let me see, let me look on the list here. This one from Denver, Colorado, from Ryback Anand. Is now still a good time to purchase multifamily real estate? I'm starting to see prices skyrocket and people asking for extraordinary amounts for their properties. It is a good time to be buying, but you got to buy right. You got to buy conservatively. There's not as many good deals out there as there used to be. But as long as the numbers work, it's a buy. If the numbers don't work, it's not a buy. And when you buy right and go into a correction, your property's not going to give you problems. When you buy wrong and go into a correction, then your property's going to give you problems. So just stay conservative, keep forming those relationships, and then buy based on the Trinity, and you'll do fine. Okay, let's take another call since there's a lot of people online today. Who would be next?
We have no further questions at the moment.
Oh.
Just as a friendly reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star zero for questions, please. Thank you.
All right, so we have open lines. So press star zero, and you can get in the queue. While you are queuing up, I'm going to answer a question from Ray Johnson from Charlotte, North Carolina. He says, can you give me an idea as to what factors you look at when choosing an emerging market? Yes, I can. We look at a year-over-year job growth of 2% or more. We look for a year-over-year household formation of 2% or more. We look for state capitals with universities or a good combination. We look for areas that have a major airport or not a major airport, an airport with one major carrier like a Delta or United going up to the gates. We look for one highway going through the area to facilitate the transportation of goods and services, train service as well. You don't need the train, but it's a plus because you can't do business without goods and services, and the highway brings them to and fro. Businesses create jobs, and that's what you're looking for. So we look for at least one major highway. The more major highways, the better. We look for the area to be a regional center for healthcare. We look for the area to be a regional center for shopping. So these are all the different things that we look for and look at. Now, you can have trade-offs. You know, they don't have to all be in place, but certainly the job growth has to be there. That's the most important factor is the job growth. So that's it. All right, one more from – let me see. Let's take a look at this one from San Diego. It's from Scott Austin. Scott Austin from San Diego. How ironic. Maybe you could talk a little bit about some strategies that work for you when presenting to investors. What are some of the things that you have learned in the past that have worked, and what are some of the things that didn't work? I can tell you the most important thing when you're doing your presentation with investors is to ask them the questions first. First thing you got to do is build rapport, okay? Find out what you have in common with them and then talk about that, because people do business with people that they like and trust. So that's a really important part of the presentation process, is the rapport building at the beginning. The second thing is asking them questions as to, you know, what types of properties are you interested in investing in? You know, what are your investment objectives? You know, what is your risk tolerance? Things like that. And then you have an idea of what they're actually looking for and whether or not you're a match or if you're close. And if you are, and the answers to the questions that you've given or you've gotten can actually, you tailor your presentation to those answers. You know, you'll have your stock presentation, but you can make little additions or subtractions as you're going along, tailor-made to those particular answers. So I like to say that, you know, any investor or any seller that's selling you a property, they're both negotiating processes. You know, the very start of the negotiating process starts with you learning how the seller or the other person on the other side, how that seller wants to be sold. Okay, and again, you only do that by building rapport and asking questions and getting good answers. So those are two of the biggest tips. And since I went through that, I'm going to promote my Perfecting Your Presentation workshop, which is going to be October 4th and 5th. And that's all about the psychological aspects of giving a presentation of, you know, the different things to say, when to say them, how to say them. We're going to talk about what I just talked about, the questioning at the beginning of a presentation. We're going to talk about the different groups that you're going to be presenting in front of and how they want to be spoken to. The other important thing about a presentation is you really need to have an understanding of how the other side, you know, communicates and how they want to be communicated to. And you want to be using, you know, the same terms and phrases that they do. And we look at family offices, and we look at insurance companies, and we look at private equity, not just private money investors, but all these other groups that will give us big money. They speak in certain languages that they want you to speak in, and they structure their deals in certain ways, and they want to see those structures in the deals that you're presenting. So we're going to go through all that as well. Not only that, we're going to have Richard Wilson from the Wilson Family Offices. He's going to talk about, you know, the smart ways to get in with these high net worth investors. So anyway, that is October. That's going to be a great event. I haven't done that. I did that event once before, 4 years ago, or I think it was actually 6 years ago in New York City. I'm doing it once again. Probably won't do it again for another 6 years, and that is October 4th and 5th. Call Jermaine or Jeannie at the office, 781-878-7114. They'll tell you all about it. All right. One more. Lynn Taylor from Phoenix writes in, do you recommend using seller carrybacks? Yeah, if you don't have the money, let the seller carry back. You know, that will reduce the amount of the raise. Do I go for it every deal? No, but the least amount that you have to put up for a deal, you know, the better the deal. So if you can get a seller carryback, certainly. I'm all for seller carrybacks. Sometimes they carry back the entire amount of the note. You know, you don't even need funding. They want 100% because they want the annuity to come in. They don't want to claim that total amount of windfall coming in when they sell the property. So they take back that, and these are people that own the properties 100%, by the way. And you'll be surprised at how many people actually own properties 100%. But they will do 100% seller carryback so they can defer their taxes. So if you ever get into a situation like that where some of you know the property is owned 100%, offer that to them and explain why it's such a good thing, and you could get that as well. All right, I got some more questions that were sent over, but I am going to open up the lines to see if anybody else has some questions out there. So, operator, who would be next?
Dave, somebody just pressed *0. Let me go ahead and get that name for you.
All right, you get that, and I'll answer another question here. This next one is from Louisville, Texas. She says, when I'm analyzing a deal, should my tax rate be different from the seller's current tax rate on the T-12 and the P&Ls? I know how to calculate the tax rate. It's 80% of the purchase price times the mill rate. But what if I can't locate the mill rate? What is the best alternative? There is no best alternative. You locate that mill rate simply by calling up to the assessor's office in the city that you're doing business with. They will give you the mill rate. So don't use what the seller gives you. Determine your tax rate based on 80% of the purchase price times the mill rate, and that will give you an idea of what your taxes will be in the future. Doesn't matter what they are now, but that's what they're going to be in the future, somewhere around there when they reassess. So, okay, who's the next caller?
Okay, up next we have Andrew. Andrew, please go ahead.
How you doing, Andrew Shenner?
Hey, Andrew.
Dave,
how's it
going? How you doing? Andrew Shenner from Blackstone, Mass.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. Got a question for you. As we're, you know, we're about 2 months really into the program here, and we're, you know, we're starting to really explore a lot more tertiary markets outside of the major markets that we began to focus on for the emerging phase. And one of the questions that we really we started discussing this morning regarding acquisition strategy was, you know, if in some of these tertiary markets, you really only have a couple of you know, real major employers like manufacturing, maybe some smaller markets in like Ohio, Indianapolis, or Indiana. If let's say 2 to 3 or 2 to 5 years, if the value add plays are 2 to 5 years from now, you know, we're going to plan our exit strategy. How do we end up? What happens realistically if we're buying on the Holy Trinity? And you know, I know we can't predict the future, but if we're buying at the Holy Trinity, and markets start to kind of decompress, may there be, you know, larger economic forces united forces, if you will, that are starting to decompress some of the rates, and you know, because the multifamily market's been is slightly long in the tooth, although there are opportunities. Like, the long-winded question would be, would doing a momentum play on a property that could use some renovations, would not doing the renovations actually be a better fit, so you wouldn't actually end up spending all that money and keeping the rents lower if the economic numbers start to decompress a little?
No, because those renovations are going to get worse, and they're going to cost you more because they've been neglected, number one. Number two, the quality of your tenant will continue to go down because good quality tenants won't rent a place that looks like it needs work. So the base of your tenant base will get worse and worse as you move forward. So the best thing to do is to buy a and I don't like the fact that if you're going into an area where there's one manufacturing company and that's all the jobs, that's not a great area to be in.
No, I certainly agree with that. I was just it was kind of a hypothetical discussion.
Okay. I wouldn't go into a property that needed work and not do the work, because those tenants are pretty much burnt out as it is. And you're getting a discount anyways because of the fact that the work isn't done. The work that needs to be done is going to get worse, and you're going to have to give a bigger discount when you go to resell on the back end. Or it's going to cost you a lot more than it would have been if you did the renovations when you first took over.
Okay. All right. Cool. Awesome, man. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. Hey, have you been by the office?
I've actually driven by after hours because I was in the area one day, but no, not yet. But I'm I'll be down that way in next month anyway. So.
All right, come down, swing by, give us a heads up. Either go out for lunch or definitely give you a tour of the office.
All right, will do, man.
All right, take care.
I appreciate it.
So Blackstone, Mass is probably about an hour and 20 minutes from here, I think, west. I think we passed it on the way up to Killington. But as I digress, who would be our next caller?
We have no further questions at the moment.
All right, I'm gonna answer another question here. This is from Marie. Doesn't even say where she's from, but it says, Dave, any words of advice for a new student? That's as broad of a question that you could possibly ask. But the words of advice are, number one, take action every day. A little bit of action. That's a real all you need, because it keeps up the momentum. If you realize a couple of days have gone by, or maybe even a week or two have gone by, and you haven't taken any action, well, then just start taking action again and start building that momentum again. There's an old Japanese proverb, which is fall down 6 times, get up 7. All right, just as long as you keep getting up. But take some sort of action if you can. Read the book The Compound Effect, which is a great book about how taking a little bit of action every day in a short period of time, you'll be astounded at how much growth you've gotten. So that's number one. Number two, get out there and start analyzing deals. Practice your analyzation of deals and put in offers, because without an offer, you're not going to get a deal. And to put in an offer, you got to do some analysis. So practice. Those are the most important things. You know, some of our coaches at the very beginning, you know, some of our all-star students, when we first started training, is we would do 30 offers in 30 days. Or 30 analysis in 30 days. They didn't have to be offers, but you had to analyze 30 deals in 30 days. And, man, that's a lot of work. We stopped doing that to the students because we were getting a lot of complaints. But I'll tell you what, the students that did the 30 and 30, I mean, they turned out to be stellar students. So I challenge you to analyze 30 deals in 30 days. And you're meeting with the coach every 2 weeks, so just simply, you know, run them very quickly past the coach. If you get stuck on something, you know, talk about the different things that you're stuck on. But that will get you there. The third and last piece of advice is work on your head stuff. The biggest competition that you have is the competition with the words or the feelings and the emotions that are taking place between your ears. If you can win that game, you can win any battle in life. It's like the 14 mile obstacle course up and down this mountain three different times. But you know, I never had a question whether or not I was going to finish. That thought wasn't even in my mind. I remember when I did Ironman, and you know, the question was not whether or not I was going to finish. It was whether or not I was going to finish within the 17 hours that was required for you to be called an Ironman for the rest of your life, which I did, by the way. If you don't know the story, 15 hours, me and my brother Dan. So the question of finishing was not ever in my mind. And when it got the hardest, when we were doing that death march up the two double black diamonds all the way up the ski lift to the top of the mountain, you know, when we were carrying that bucket of rocks there in this big, huge loop up and down, halfway up this double black diamond and down the other side, when we were swimming in that icy cold water and climbing up that ladder and trying to pull those ropes, you know, I would shout out to the team, mind over matter. If you don't mind, it don't matter. And that's so true. So learn how to win the head game and focus on that. When you win the head game, you have won. Nothing can defeat you. I was in total pain for 2 years, and this is another realization of how powerful the mind is. I've got 3 degenerated discs, 2 herniated discs, and the top of my spine is full of bone spurs. So my spine's a wreck. I remember when I went into the spine doctor, I was in so much pain, I went to the best spine specialist in the world over at New England Baptist over in Boston. And he was looking at my spine, and he said, I want you to take a look at a normal spine. And he flips it up on that x-ray thing. And I looked at it, and I said, yeah. And he says, I want you to take a look at your spine. And all of a sudden, he flashes it up there, and the total lower third is completely dark, black. I'm like, oh, my God. And he goes, yeah, oh, my God is right. He goes, your spine is not in great shape. I was like, oh, I thought it must have been, you know, all that powerlifting I did back in the 2000s because I was on a powerlifting team for a couple of years. He goes, nope, that wasn't it. I said, oh, it must have been all that Ironman training I did, you know, because I did Ironman in 2013. And he said, nope, that wasn't it. He says, as a matter of fact, he said, if you didn't do those things, you'd probably be in worse shape now. But he said, I said to him, running the Boston, that's probably why it took me 5 hours and 10 minutes to run the Boston Marathon, which was the last event I had done. Probably that was about 4 months before I'd seen him. And he looked at me and he said, you ran the Boston Marathon with this back? And I said, yeah. And he said, you are going to be my case study for anybody who says they can't do something. So as it turns out, 2 years into total and complete pain, I did everything possible. I was teaching at the time. I was going out, you know, every three or fourth week, and I was teaching a 3-day event, and it was brutal, and I was asking everybody for advice on what I should do, and everybody was giving me advice, and I was doing everything because I want to get out of pain. When you're in pain, you do everything you can to get out of it. And I finally, somebody in my business group, my Harvard business group, we meet once a month, and he said, read this book. He said, if you can see yourself in the pages of this book, if you think this book was written for you, he said, then follow this writing class thing. Recovery program. It's called the Writing Recovery Program. He says, follow that, which is basically you write for a half an hour a day for 40 straight days. They give you the topics to write about. It only takes about 30 minutes. But he says, if you can see yourself in the book, he says, then let me know, and I'm going to tell you about this writing program that you should do. And when I read the book, I was like, oh, my God, they wrote this book for me. And then I did the writing program, and I was kind of like a hard healer. But it actually took me 60 days to heal instead of 90. And it's not that my back healed at all. What I did was I healed my mind. I got in deep with the power of my mind, and I stopped the pain. I still have degenerated discs. I still have 2 herniated discs. I still have bone spurs on the all up above my spine. But since December of 2 years ago, I have not been in any pain, and I just completed a 10-hour up and down the mountain 3 times, 32 obstacle course race. So the mind is a powerful, powerful thing. And just learn how to control it. And learn how to work it to your advantage. So the name of that book was Mind Over Back Pain, if you didn't get it. And that it doesn't just work for back pain. It works for knee pain and wrist pain and fibromyalgia and all that stuff. If you can see yourself in the pages, if you're in pain and you can see yourself in the pages of that book, then email me or contact me here in the office, and I'll tell you where to find that 40-day writing therapy thing. So I guess that was a very broad question. That was a very broad answer to that very broad question. By the way, Elevate, I'll plug that again. Elevate, October 6th and 7th. If you're going to perfect your presentation, go to Elevate. October 6th and 7th is all about the very first meeting. It's all about the mind. The first meeting is I have my CEO coach, which I'm always being coached by somebody just like you guys are being coached. So I have my Harvard CEO coach going to be doing a present after I open it up for the first module. Him and two of his partners are going to do the next three modules on all about your business. The next day, I'm going to be talking about all about the mind and how to harness the power of your mind and how to win and how to have your best year ever the next year. And then we have two more meetings after that. One of them is all about how I do complete analysis of emerging markets. It's going to take me about 6 hours to explain it step by step to everybody, but for the first time ever, I'm going to do that. And then we go into a quasi-mastermind the next day. And then the third time we meet is all about your health, all about your physical and mental health, and of course, the mastermind on the second day. But it's really, really good stuff. But the second day, first time, is going to be the mental as well. So I am going to open it up for more – to get more information, call Jermaine or Jeannie at the office. Jeff's here as well, I think. He's usually out teaching an immersion event, but I think I saw him here, so you can talk to him as well. Call the office. Get some more information. That happens in October. It's going to be great. Who's next? We've got time for a couple more if anybody's on the line. Actually, we've got time for one more if anybody's on the line.
Yes, we actually have one more. Up next we have
right.
Paul. Paul, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, Paul.
Do you have any insights when you meet with a seller about, other than just flat out asking, why are you selling? I mean, I did do that. Any other interesting things of trying to gauge their motivation?
Well, the easiest way to do it is to ask them why they're selling. If it's one-on-one with the seller, it's hard to, you know, that's the hardest question to ask, because if they're motivated, then, you know, they're not going to tell you why they're motivated. If there's a problem with the property, they're probably not going to tell you there's a problem with the property. If they have a problem with the tenants, they're probably not going to tell you. So, you know, it's a hard question to get the right answer from. So I actually stopped asking it. But one thing is, you just try to do the proper due diligence to try to figure out, you know, if there's some sort of a value add, what might it be in this particular property? Something's not going right.
I asked it today, and he said that he's got a partner, and I had heard that he was having troubles with his partner, but then he said, but I've had a 12-year battle with my partner. And I thought, well, if you've been surviving this for 12 years, you could probably survive it for 13, too. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. I just thought I'd see if you had any insight.
No, I stopped asking the question because it's just, you just never know if you're getting the right answer. Sometimes the brokers know, though. You can ask the broker, you know, if they have an idea of why they're selling.
Okay.
You might get the right answer there. But it's still, even if they're motivated to sell and they're set on a particular price, you know, unless they're going into foreclosure or have to sell for some reason, you know. It always, I mean,
yeah.
If you find out the information why, you can certainly use it to your advantage possibly. You know, if it's information that,
okay,
that you could use. So I still try to find out, but I never ask that question directly to a seller anymore.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good luck out there. Okay, well, it's homework time, so it's time for you to dig deep, get out there, get yourself into two networking situations, get yourself into two analyzation situations where you're going to be putting in offers, because it's proven that if you do, the simple success formula of two offers in two networking situations, you cannot help but be successful. But you got to do it. You got to do it. Jeannie's going to be in next week on a Let's Grill Jeannie, and I'll see you in about 2 weeks' time. So, all right, get out there and do some apple picking. It's that time of year. See you later, everybody.